At this time of night, there was very little traffic on the airport road, only a few rumbling military trucks. The journey took less than half an hour. Ramon travelled so often that he had his own regimen for minimizing the adverse effects of jet lag. He neither ate nor touched alcohol during the flight, and he had trained himself to sleep in any circumstance. A man who could fall asleep on a bed of jagged Ethiopian rock in a temperature of 42 degrees, or in the hothouse of a dripping Central American rainforest with centipedes crawling over his skin, could do so even in the torturous seat of an Aleutian passenger jet. Although the sun burnt down with a peculiar brilliance and dampened his open sports shirt along the spine and at the armpits, it was by his reckoning a Moscow winter midnight and not a balmy Caribbean noon when he stepped off the plane at Havana's José Martí Airport. He made the local connection on a scheduled flight, an old prop-driven Dakota that flew him down to Cienfuegos. Lugging his own valise from the airport building, he bargained with the driver of one of the vintage Detroit model taxis standing at the Piqueras rank and took the ride out to the military cantonment at Buenaventura. On the way, they skirted the sparkling water of the Bahía de Cochinos and passed the museum dedicated to the Battle of the Bay of Pigs. It always gave him a satisfied glow of achievement when he recalled his own role in that salutary humiliation of the American barbarians. It was late afternoon when the taxi dropped him at the gates of the Buenaventura camp. The day's activity was coming to an end, and columns of the Che Guevara paratrooper regiment were marching back to barracks. These were crack troops in brown fatigues, trained especially for an assault role in any theatre of the world, but since the last meeting of the Politburo in Havana, they had been exercising and training for deployment in Africa. Ramon paused to watch a unit pass them by. Young men and women, they were singing one of the revolutionary songs that he remembered so well from the bitter days in the Sierra Maestra. Land of the Landless was the title, and the lyric made his skin prickle even though it was all so long ago. He showed his pass at the gate to the married officer's quarters. Ramon was dressed in sports shirt and light cotton slacks, with open sandals on his feet, but the sergeant of the guard saluted him deferentially when he recognized his name and rank. Ramon was one of the 82 heroes. Their names were recited in the schoolrooms and sung in the bodegas. His cottage was one in a row of identical two-bedroom, flat-roofed, adobe-walled dwellings set amongst the palms above the beach. The calm waters of the Bay of Pigs sparkled between the long, curved stems of the palms. Adra Olivares was sweeping the narrow front veranda, but when he was still 100 paces distant, she looked up and saw him, and her expression smoothed into neutrality. "Welcome, Comrade Colonel," she said quietly, as he stepped up onto the veranda, and although she cast down her gaze, she could not conceal the fear in her eyes. "Where is Nicholas?" he asked as he dropped his valise on the concrete floor, and in reply she looked away down towards the beach. There was a group of children frolicking at the edge of the water, their shrill, excited cries carried above the clatter of the trade wind in the palm fronds. The children were all wearing bathing suits, and their bodies were brown and sleek with sun and water. Nicholas stood a little apart from the other children, and Ramon felt his heart turn over as he recognized his son. It was only within the last year that he had begun to think of him that way. Before that, it had always been the child, and in his departmental reports it had been the child of Red Rose. Insidiously, it had become my son, but only in his mind. The words were never spoken or written down. Ramon left the veranda of the cottage and drifted down through the palms to the beach. At the high water mark, he sat on the low sea wall and watched his son. Nicholas was just 3 years of age. He was precocious and physically well-developed for his age. He would grow to be tall. Already his limbs were long and coltish, without any trace of baby fat. He stood with one hip thrust out, his weight all on one leg, his hand upon the hip, in a pose that called to mind Michelangelo's David. Ramon's interest in the child had been awakened only after it became clear that he was exceptionally intelligent. The reports from his teacher at the camp nursery school had been euphoric. His drawings and his speech were those of a child many years older. Until that time, Ramon had taken no active part in the child's upbringing. He had arranged this accommodation for Adra Olivares and Nicholas through the DGA in Havana. Adra was now a lieutenant in the Organization of State Security. Ramon had arranged that also. It was necessary for her to have officer's rank in order to qualify for one of the Buenaventura cottages and to enable Nicholas to attend the military creche and nursery school. For the first 2 years, Ramon had not seen the child, although the various reports from the military clinic and the education department had passed over his desk when he prepared dispatches for Red Rose. Eventually, these reports and the accompanying photographs had piqued his interest. He had made the journey down to Buenaventura from the capital. It seemed that the child recognized him immediately. He had hidden behind Adra's legs and peered out at Ramon fearfully. The last time he had seen his father was in that white-tiled operating theatre in the Buenaventura military clinic, when Ramon had staged his partial drowning in front of the camera to coerce Red Rose into accepting his authority. Nicholas had been only a few weeks old at the time. It was impossible that he could remember the incident, and yet his reaction to Ramon had been too intense to be merely coincidental. Ramon had been taken unawares by his own response to the child's terror. He was accustomed to other people's trepidation in his presence. It seldom needed one of his ruthless demonstrations to instill fear in those around him. But this had been different. Apart from his own mother and his cousin Fidel, he had felt no deep sympathetic response to any of his fellow human beings. He had always deemed this to be one of his great strengths. He was almost impervious to sentimental or emotional considerations. This allowed him to make his decisions and base his actions entirely upon logical and intellectual judgment. When necessary, he was able to sacrifice a comrade of many years' standing without flinching and with no futile and debilitating regrets later. He could make tender and unselfish love to a beautiful woman and only hours later, without a moment's hesitation, order her execution. He had trained himself to be above all feeble, mundane considerations. He had forged and tempered himself into one of Lenin's steely men, and honed the edges of his strength and resolve into a terrible shining weapon. And then, unexpectedly, he had found this flaw in the metal of his soul. A tiny flaw, he consoled himself, as he sat on the sea wall in the bright Caribbean sunshine and watched the child. Only a hairline crack in the blade, and then only because this is part of me, blood of my blood, flesh of my flesh, and my hope for immortality. He cast his mind back to that episode in the military clinic. In his imagination, he saw once again the infant squirming in the doctor's grip, and heard the outraged, terrified squeals and the painful, choking breath as he lifted the sodden little head from the waters of the tank. He did not flinch from the memory. At the time, it was necessary, he thought. Never regret the strong, the necessary action, the deed of steel. The child stooped and picked a shell from the sand at his feet. He turned it in his hands and bowed his head to examine the iridescent pearly fragment. Nicholas's curls were dark and dense, and although damp with sea salt, the sun struck little reddish sparks from them. He had inherited many features from his mother. Even Ramon could recognize that chiseled classical nose and the clean, sweet line of his jaw. However, the green eyes were Ramon's eyes. Suddenly, the child threw back his arm and sent the shell skimming out. It hopped across the still water, leaving a series of tiny dimples where it touched the surface. Then Nicholas turned away and began to walk along the edge of the water. But at that moment there came an anguished squeal from the group of children further up the beach. One of the little girls had been knocked over in the rough and tumble, and she sprawled on the white sand and howled, "Nicholas!" With a patient sigh, Nicholas turned back to her and lifted her to her feet. She was a pretty little imp, with sand on one cheek, tears welling from her huge dark eyes. Her costume had slid halfway down to her knees, revealing the cleft between her chubby pink little buttocks. Nicholas hauled up her costume for her, restoring her modesty, but almost lifting her off her feet in the process. Then he led her by the hand to the water. He washed the sand off her cheek and wiped the tears from her eyes. The girl gave one last convulsive sniff and stopped howling. She took Nicholas's hand and trotted beside him as he led her up the beach. "I will take you back to your mama," Nicholas was telling her. And then he looked up and saw his father. He stopped abruptly and stared at him. Ramon saw the flare of terror in his eyes that was instantly hidden. Then Nicholas lifted his chin in a defiant gesture, and his expression went dead. Ramon liked what he saw. It was good that the boy felt fear, for fear was the basis of respect and obedience. It was good also that he could control and hide that fear. The ability to conceal fear was one of the qualities of leadership. Already he showed a strength and resolve far beyond his tender years. "He is my son," Ramon thought, and raised one hand in a gesture of command. "Come here, boy," he said. The little girl shrank away from him. Then she released Nicholas's hand and fled up the beach, bawling once again, but this time for her mother. Ramon did not even glance in her direction. He often had that effect on children. Nicholas steeled himself visibly and then came to his father's bidding.
"Good day, Padre,"
he held out his hand solemnly. "Good day, Nicholas," Ramon took the proffered hand. He had schooled the child to shake hands like a man, but Adra had taught him the term of address, Padre. He should not have allowed it, but was pleased that in the end he had done so. It gave him another little twinge of sentimentality to be addressed as father, but that was an indulgence he could afford. There were few enough that he allowed himself. "Sit here," Ramon indicated the wall beside him, and Nicholas scrambled up and sat with his little legs dangling. They were silent for a while. Ramon did not approve of childish chatter. When he asked finally, "What have you been doing?" Nicholas considered the question gravely.
"I have been going to school every day."
"What do they teach you at school?"
"We learn the drills and the songs of the revolution," Nicholas thought about it a little longer. "And we paint."
They were silent again until Nicholas added helpfully,
"In the afternoons we swim and play soccer, and in the evenings I help Adra with the housework. Then we watch the TV together."
He was 3 years old, Ramon reminded himself. A Western child who was asked the same questions might have replied, "Nothing," or "Just stuff." Nicholas had spoken like a man, a little old man. "I have brought you a present," Ramon told him.
"Thank you, Padre."
"Don't you want to know what it is?"
"You will show it to me," Nicholas pointed out, "and then I will know what it is."
It was a plastic model of an AK-47 assault rifle. Although it was a miniature, it was perfect in detail, with a removable magazine that was loaded with metallic painted bullets. Ramon had bought it at a toy shop on his last visit to London. Nicholas's eyes shone as he raised it to his shoulder and aimed it down towards the beach. Apart from the first flash of fear, it was the only real emotion he had displayed since Ramon's arrival. When he pulled the trigger, the toy rifle made a satisfying warlike clatter.
"It is very beautiful," Nicholas said. "Thank you, Padre."
"It is a good toy for a brave son of the revolution," Ramon told him.
"Am I a brave son of the revolution?"
"One day you will be," Ramon told him.
"Comrade Colonel, it is time for the child's bath,"
Adra intervened diffidently. She took Nicholas and led him from the veranda into the cottage. Ramon put aside the temptation to follow them. It was unseemly for him to participate in such a bourgeois domestic ritual. Instead, he went to the small table at the end of the veranda, where Adra had set out a jug of lime juice and a bottle of Havana Club rum, indisputably the finest rum in the world. Ramon mixed himself a mojito, and then selected a cigar from the box on the table. He smoked only when he was at home in Cuba, and then only the premium cigars of Miguel Fernando Rioch, and Adra knew this. Like the Havana Club, they were the finest in the world. He took the tall, sugared glass and the cigar back to his seat and watched the sunset turn the waters of the bay to bloodied gold. From the bathroom, he heard the splashing and the happy cries of his son, and Adra's soft replies. Ramon was a warrior and a wanderer on the face of the earth. This was the closest he would ever come to a home of his own. Perhaps the child had made it so for him. Adra served a meal of chicken, and Moros Cristianos, or Moors and Christians, a mixture of black beans and white rice. Through the DGA, Ramon had arranged a preferential ration book for the little household. He wanted the boy to grow up strong and well-nourished. "Soon you are going on a journey with me," he told Nicholas as they ate. "Across the sea. Would you like that, Nicholas?"
Will Adra come with me?
The question irritated Ramon. He did not recognize his annoyance as jealousy. He answered shortly, "Si."
Then I will like that, Nicholas nodded. Where will we go?
To Spain, Ramon told him. To the land of your ancestors and the land of your birth. After dinner, Nicholas was allowed to watch the television for 1 hour. And when his eyelids drooped, Adra took him to his bedroom. When she returned to the small, starkly furnished living room, she asked Ramon, "Do you want me tonight?" Ramon nodded. She was over 40 years of age. However, her belly was flat and her thighs were firm and powerful. She had never given birth, and she had extraordinary muscular control. At his request, she often excited him with a little trick. He would hold one end of a lead pencil while she snapped it in half with a spasmodic constriction of her vaginal sphincter. She was an adept, one of the most natural and intuitive lovers he had ever known. Furthermore, she was terrified of him, which enhanced both her pleasure and his.